located at 1301 North Fremont Street in Portland. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Triangle Productions premiere of Tick, Tick, Boom, a play by Jonathan Larson. Tick, Tick, Boom is a 3-chapter pop rock musical about facing crossroads in life and holding on to your dreams that was first produced off-Broadway in 2001. Tick, Tick, Boom plays at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland, from September 4th through the 27th. More information about Tick, Tick, Boom can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Registration is now open for the Pacific Northwest Social Forum coming to Portland the weekend of September 26th through the 28th. The weekend will feature People's Movement assemblies on topics such as treaty rights, food sovereignty, housing justice, and more. The Social Forum will begin Friday, September 26th with the concert by KBOO Station co-manager Mike Crenshaw and friends. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of this important and historic event where we, the people, will create the Pacific Northwest Plan of Action for social, economic, and climate justice. Information about registration, endorsement, childcare, or on the Pacific Northwest Social Forum in general can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. The music of Black Sabbath here on Words and Pictures. I'm Kathleen Stevenson sitting in Conch. SW Concert has had an emergency, and I'm subbing for him on Words and Pictures today. And with me is the creative team of Bruce Zick, John Shanker, and by phone, Kevin Fox. They are here to introduce their mythological epic, Mandala. I'm going to speak to each of you individually so we'll know the sound of your voice. First, John Shanker, welcome to KBOO and Words and Pictures.
Hi, thank you.
Also with us, as I mentioned, is Bruce Zick. He's in studio with us. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you.
And by phone, we have Kevin Fox from Los Angeles.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for being with us, Kevin.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Now, produced at a small studio in Portland and distributed by local publisher Dark Horse Comics, Mandala is an epic story, blurring fiction, reality, and mythology, and crossing the lines between comics, film, TV, games, and digital series. The artist in this project is Bruce Zick, and he is with Kevin Fox, as we mentioned, who is the Blair Witch Project co-creator, and John Shanker is the co-founder of the cross-media studio Big Eye Group. So thank you all for coming in, and let's start out with talking about a bit about Mandala and what it is, a little bit more than what I told people just now. Would you like to talk about that one, John?
Sure, I'd love to. So Mandala is a story that we like to say where fiction meets reality, because it deals with conceptual themes and current event themes and actually mythologies from all around the world in one story. And it's much like The Matrix. It invites people to question the nature of reality, and it takes everybody on a ride and a long ride through history and the possibility of a future for all of us. And we're inviting the audience to participate in that story. So essentially the subject-object dualism, we like to see that kind of fall down as people enter into the narrative.
And where did the narrative come from?
It came from a few friends, and then it grew from more friends and more like-minded people. This is a project that's been in development for 10 years, and so it's kind of a collective brain trust in a lot of ways, and it comes from the collective unconscious. It comes from the stories and the treasure house of humanity.
And the book, did the book come first?
The book, actually, the script for the film came first, and so that's still stashed away, and we're working on that. We're actually, Kevin will speak more to the business side of where things are at, but the book is the first product that's been released, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the three of you and how you got connected with your different areas. How did you two meet? Because you two are both in the local area.
I'm just trying to remember actually how we first met, but I live out in Corbett, and at one point I was introduced to John, who might have been tracking me down because he had heard there was an artist living out in the woods there somewhere. And so we first talked about it, and I just sort of thought, okay, well, this sounds really wild and crazy, and good luck, and I hope you can pull it together and we can work on it. And then I think a fair amount of time went by, and then we would see each other again, and I'd get progress reports, and then became pretty clear it was ready to start happening. So we met and we talked about it, and John gave me the movie script to read, and we just had a great first outdoor session on it, and I just thought, this is an amazing story, and I really wanted to be involved in it.
And Kevin, who is on the phone, Kevin, how did you connect with this project?
That's a great question. I think I was in Portland for about a year, working on some other smaller projects, sort of scouting out what Portland is. I think Portland's ripe for something big to happen, so I thought I'd go check it out there. And fate just brought me to John through different contacts and different people that we know. I kept hearing about this project, and I love to live on this side of reality and fiction. I think stories and the way we use them and how we tell stories, we're always altering reality anyway and trying to believe in certain things. And when he told me what he was working on, I said, I have to get involved with this project. It's right up my alley. The idea of creating something fictional, but yet based in reality, or is it reality that we're turning into fiction? And this was right on the cusp of that. And I went crazy over it. It was awesome.
And talk a little bit about what you actually do on the project, what your role involves.
That's a good question. I think we're still trying to figure that out with all of us. What do we do? I'm a filmmaker, and I work in both web and TV and film, and this had a piece. Well, a lot of projects I find are sort of film-based, or they're web-based, or they want to be on television. And this one is this really interesting. I look to the future of storytelling, and this has a piece in all of that. And they cross over into each other. So I can experience this. I can go see the film and then come home and continue the story on the web, or pick up a graphic novel, or then, flick on Netflix, and it'll just cross over seamlessly into all three or four or 10 different mediums that we're going to be dealing with.
10. Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
At least.
At least, exactly. When I walk around and see people on a phone, I wonder, I always think, what are they doing on that? Are they watching something? Are they engaging with something? Are they talking to somebody? Are they texting? And then what is it they're texting about, And like I said, this story gives us something all to be participating in and watching and doing as well. I really love this whole concept.
John?
Yeah, I would just jump in and say, for those that haven't read the book, because it just was released in May by Dark Horse, and we're cruising towards a second printing already, so we encourage everybody to help us kind of get over that hump, because that will signal to other bookstores to pick it up. And this is really a movement that we're calling the audience into the narrative, and that's participatory right now. That's going out and getting a book. And I just want to give a little quick synopsis and overall for those that haven't read the book. The basic narrative is about a psychic technological cage or prison that we're all in right now, that's set up by a kind of shadowy cabal that's not just behind the governments, but that's on an interdimensional level. And so those are kind of, those are the bad guys in the story. And the good guys are human beings who are activating their latent DNA, and they're starting to develop these superpowers, not like Batman or Superman, not derivative in latex and tights like that, but actually the archetypal unconscious powers that are in each one of us. And those are manifesting differently in our characters, and these are the superheroes of our story. And they're from all around the world, and they're just like all of us. And so that's the,
let me jump in there, John, real quick, because we are the superheroes of the story. You know, we, all of us as readers, we all have this potential to do something great. And we can, whether it's on a small scale or a great scale. And by reading this, I think people get inspired to be that bigger hero that they want to be.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, you know, the philosophical or spiritual or existential quest is to answer the questions, why am I here? Who am I? What am I doing? Well, we wanted to create a 360 experience in a narrative, not in politics, not in religion, but in art and story, to invite a critical mass. So the overall goal of the good guys, you could say, even though that kind of gets gray along the lines, but the overall goal is to reach a critical mass of enlightenment that would shift the future of humanity. So how are we going to get to that? We ask right now, right here, to everybody that's listening, how do we get there?
Yeah, I think what excited me about the story is that you read the book and then you put it down, and then the story goes on. You can actually become involved through other aspects of the book, which are on Facebook. There's a Facebook app, and there's a website, a location. And so the book entertains you, but then you go, well, is it time for me to wake up? Is it time for me to maybe look at myself? And what are the resources of how I can continue on with being involved with the world of the mandala? And there are places where you can go and then continue the quest with all of us as we keep developing the project.
Listening.
The story
go ahead, Kevin.
I was going to say the story taps into a lot of things that are going around in the world around us in reality. So when you put the book down, as Bruce said, you still think, wait a second, I'm still thinking about those things, the wiretapping or the ecological disasters, and you start to really, you continue the story in the real world. And that's, like I said, that was where you do wake up and look at yourself and go, wait a second, can I do something about this? Should I do something about this? Mm. We often joke amongst ourselves in the Matrix when he says, you know, you take the red pill or the blue pill. And we all got that and went, wow, but now what? Now what do we do? Mm-hmm. And I think this tends to push you in that direction. Do something, you know.
We're talking about Mandala, a project that is a mythological epic, and the creative team working on this is with us. You just heard from Kevin Fox, and before him you heard from Bruce Zick, and before him John Shanker. They're all working on this project. This might be a good time to hear a clip from, this is... we're going to wait on that a little bit, but we'll have that coming up. But in the meantime, one question I had for you, Bruce, was talk a little bit about the process of doing the art for this.
Okay.
Because it's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I'd love to. When John brought the project to me and we talked about how to approach it visually, I felt like it was time for me to take an extreme right turn from what I've been doing in the past, which was maybe more realistically based kind of illustration. And I wanted to do something that tapped more into maybe a more primitive style, a more graphic style. And so I began to switch my influences of the artists that I loved in the past, and then I started focusing more on Frank Miller style, in Sin City, and Mike Mignola and Hellboy, and those became my new inspirations. And so from there, I just went, okay, I've got to do something really different now. And I talked to John a lot about it, and I think also there was a feeling that there's a certain Native American influence in the story, certainly with some of the main characters and in the feel of it. And I did some research into Native American graphic styles and wanted to incorporate that as well. So that was sort of driving the new direction that I was taking. And I have to say, maybe I only got about halfway towards my goal of achieving this different style, just because it's so hard to switch gears mentally and do something new. But because this is an ongoing series, we're working on the second graphic novel series right now, and that'll give me the chance to maybe get another 20 or 30% closer to the style that I'm trying to get. But I think it's a style that suits the material of what John brought to me.
Do you notice?
Well, now, Bruce, you've on the second one, I've seen some of the sketches and some of the illustrations he's done. He's really incorporated that Pacific Northwest Native American style into it. At a great, you've done a great job.
Yeah, thanks.
It looks so awesome.
We can't wait to get it out. It's killing us. We want it out so quickly, but it'll take a little while.
And maybe that would relate to another question about the Pacific Northwest element of this project, because John, you have really an interest in making this a project that is based in this area. Talk about that and what that means in this world of comics and other projects.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'd love Kevin to chime in on that as well, since he'll be moving up here to kind of really, you know, you asked before what Kevin would be doing. In a lot of ways, we'd like him to, with his experience with Blair Witch, and he's just super competent in all the aspects of the business. We'd like him to, and the craft really, to run the studio here in Portland. And so he's willing to become an expat of Hollywood, as Bruce has done before him, and establish himself on the land and in the woods and in the trees. And the sense of place for us is the narrative of the West, and continuing, what are we, where are we, what are we pioneering now? And there's kind of an old world that's dying, and there's new possibilities and a new narrative that's being born. And we see this all around Portland all the time. We see people doing sustainably conscious living, things that are more thoughtful, that are integrated into the well-being of the whole planet. And we would like to kind of do with this story what Star Wars did for Marin. I mean, we'd like this city to be a part of this story and to be in the narrative as fiction meets reality, as we that are living here in our little bioregion walk the walk and try and contribute to the overall community.
And are there challenges doing it in this area as opposed to other areas?
There are, actually, you know, because there's a lot of this business happens, as everyone knows, down in Hollywood. But there are pioneers, and you know, Bruce is one of them. He worked for Disney and Pixar for a long time, and he staked his claim in I won't disclose where, in the countryside. And there are challenges. You know, the funding is different here. The crews are different. But there are, you know, there's shows that are coming here and shooting here, but they're kind of like the circus coming to town. We don't want to be the circus coming to town. We want to be locals from the town, contributing to the town, creating in the town. And I think that's the next wave, and people are catching it.
And you also would like to have participation, as you've mentioned, from the community. How do you go about getting that? What's that about?
Kevin, do you want to speak to that?
Well, yeah. So there's, you know, on the business side, there is this sort of concept that LA is down there and we're up in Portland and things don't happen. But I think that's a myth. Like John said, the circus does come to town a lot. But, you know, we in LA, we laugh. I look at people shooting. Where are they shooting mostly? They're in Vancouver. They're moving to Atlanta, Louisiana. So I think we can shoot or create anywhere. And I, like I said, I think Portland is ripe for something big to happen there and be generated from there. But I also, you know, tapping into the community, you know, I think the community there already exists and they're already doing the things we're talking about, as John touched on. I don't think it's so much that we'd have to build or create the community. We'd just have to sort of reach out to them, and I think they would get what we're doing. I think there's a ton of creative people in the Portland area. I think that's one of your sort of biggest products is creativity. And I'd love to see a way to create a hub where that creativity can be channeled and used, not just for our project, but for other projects outside of it, but using a lot of the resources that we pull together in that community.
Great. That's Kevin Fox. And he is one of the people involved in this team of contributors to the mythological epic Mandala that we're talking about here on Words and Pictures. And this might be a good time to hear the clip from Mandala that is available on the website.
Yeah, at mandalacomic.com you could see this with visuals.
Okay, we're going to listen to it right now.
The clock is ticking. It's going down as we speak. We all know it. Another fictional tale of the end of the world? Or is this really happening? What is real? This is a great game afoot. A grand experiment. In your mind, in the collective consciousness, you are not separate from what you perceive. And what you perceive is about to be radically altered. You know we're being enslaved in a prison planet. You know the mind control grid is almost complete. And you know when it's finished, they'll begin eliminating us. The clock is ticking. The final page is turning. But there is good news. There is one last chance, a loophole in the space-time continuum. A cosmic Hail Mary. Hope for humanity. A small group has a plan to gather the critical mass. They can't do it alone. They need you. Infiltrate the mass media machine with a story that is perceived to be fiction, but in reality is the story of the collective awakening already underway. Remember, whoever controls the narrative controls the future. So this is where you come in. If enough of us wake up, we all wake up. Are you awake? The clock is ticking. The alarm is ringing.
A lot of smiles around the table as that was playing, and pretty dramatic. Well, who is the who's speaking there? Kevin.
Sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Oh, just who is the...
Who is speaking? That's the narrator. That's our narrator of our story.
It's one of the 13.
One of the 13.
Who are billed as the creators of the book. Okay. Stuart Moore is the writer, and Stuart Moore was the first editor for Vertigo, as people will know, which is a DC imprint. And he also writes for Marvel and DC all the time. He's a super talented writer. So the 13 are the characters that are featured in the story, but they're actually real people that, you asked where the story came from, and frankly, it came from the 13, mm-hmm. who are a diverse group of people that we're kind of working with, but we can't really say who they are.
Interesting.
I haven't even met most of the 13. I don't even know who some of them are.
Huh. That's a little different. Great. And we couldn't see the images with that, of course, but just even the little bit I saw on the website made me realize how complex that would be to create images along with it. So
yeah, I think Bruce is still recovering from all of the creatures and things from the collective unconscious that have been released.
They made me draw a lot of weird stuff. and there's about 250 pages in this graphic novel. I mean, it's a big story, and it goes all over the place. Mm. It goes all over the world and into other dimensions, and it also pulls on world mythology, which is, I think, really unique about this story, is that it pulls in Greco-Roman, it pulls in Hindu, Central American, Native American, Norse mythology. It just brings all the mythologies together into one big gumbo kind of a gestalt. And I've never seen a story that really pulls that all together like that, which is really one of the first things that drew me to the project.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming to the end of the interview, and Kevin, Is there anything that you would like to add that you think is important that we may have missed about this topic?
I think mostly that this story, like I said, it does take use of what media we use today. And it's starting, you know, we're all talking about how there's going to be this convergence of media, or how there's going to be this storytelling overlap that goes into all these things, whether it's gaming or like I said, watching a film or experiencing something with each other. And this is one of those stories that I think can do that. A lot of others feel cheap or cheated, like I'm going to go see the Marvel Universe and then I'm going to go home and play the Captain America video game. That to me isn't a true crossover, and this really is. And more importantly, it's getting into our, you know, like Bruce and John were saying, it gets into our consciousness, and it really makes us think about things, and it makes us wake up and want to work together and have this sort of collective consciousness rising all of us up to make a difference. And as the narrator says in that piece we listened to, you know, we are, the narrative is the story, and stories change the future, and that's something I think we can all do. You know, so on that note, I'll just say, we're looking to shoot in probably late fall or early next year the digital series that is aside to the comic. It's very different. It's a live-action piece. It is not graphic. It is not animated. And then there is a whole other piece that we'll be shooting later on. We're talking to some studios about doing TV, long form, where it's, you know, keeps going for season after season. So there's multiple platforms, multiple lines of stories, but again, all coming back to the same thing, which is we have to change the future.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. And John?
I think that sums it up really nicely. We're really excited to be here in Portland and start shooting that film with Kevin, what we're calling a digital series, which means it'll be released to the web most likely, and then released as a full film that would be viewed potentially in theaters around the world. So we're really looking forward as we continue the story in the next volume and online. The community is already growing. There's about 9,000 people already on the Facebook page, and the word of mouth is what we're feeling starting to get out there. And so, like we said, it's a movement of the people for the planet. It's a story where those that already know who they are, which there are a lot on the planet, can share what they know with people that are younger and maybe finding their way and what their path is. It's a collective intelligence, a hub for collective intelligence, if you will, to self-organize and coordinate in creating the future that we want to create, not the future that's dictated to us by, you know, the other narratives that are dominating the airwaves. You know, we have unlimited power as people, and we want people to feel empowered by being a part of this story with us.
And for people getting information about this project?
Yeah, they can go to mandalacomic.com, mm-hmm. and they can also find us, it's the Enter the Mandala. Is that Mandala for people that, it's M-A-N-D-A-L-A.
Yes, when I was quickly Googling in this emergency situation, I went to M-A-N-D-E-L-A and got a totally different, which was interesting also. But so thank you. And I don't know, did you want to say anything in closing, Bruce, the artist?
Maybe just that when we really like to hear from people, we want to have a two-way relationship with the readership. And so we hope that after you read the story, you will communicate with us through all these different opportunities, either on Facebook or emailing or writing us. But we want to have a relationship that goes on beyond just the book itself, and we want people to get involved in where we're going next.
Great. I want to thank you all very much. Thanks for coming in, and also to Jane Nechtel, who has been sitting here as support person, and SW Concert. Hope everything works out. This has been Words and Pictures. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, sitting in for SW Concert. And also, this program will be uploaded to our website a little bit later, and we're going out with more of Black Sabbath.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just like witches at black masses, evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine.
machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
And now, the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, September 11th. In a meeting yesterday, the Beaverton Planning Commission approved medical marijuana dispensaries in three areas of the city. The Planning Commission also voted to restrict the operating hours of the dispensaries to between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. and to provide a 1,000-foot barrier between dispensaries and city parks. The recommendations must be approved by Beaverton City Council to go into effect, which will vote on the issue next month at the earliest. In national news, an online protest yesterday by some of the largest internet companies led to the highest number of complaints to the FCC in that agency's history. The companies, which included Netflix, Reddit, and Tumblr, urged viewers to submit comments supporting net neutrality. Without net neutrality, large companies would have more access to internet users who pay higher fees, while people trying to access non-corporate sites would find them slow or impossible to load. The FCC recorded 1.4 million complaints on the issue during yesterday's day of action. A UN panel has reported that the hole in the ozone layer is shrinking. The gas layer, which plays a critical role in protecting the Earth from solar radiation, has been a cause of concern for scientists for the last 35 years, as man-made chemicals have depleted it. Scientists attribute the closing of the ozone hole to the phasing out of corrosive chlorofluorocarbons and the prevalence of greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases trap heat near the Earth, causing global warming, while also cooling the outer layers of the atmosphere. That's all for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, September 11th.